Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, let's go. Glad that you are hanging out with me. I am Lawrence Holmes here with you until 10 o'clock, a full boat show. Please be careful walking around. I mean, I know I'm dumb, and I mean, I fell on the ice today. I'm all right. So just be careful, especially around that black ice. Be very careful as you're walking around. This hour is being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the number 4-KIDS. Later on in the show, you'll hear from Barry Rosner. We're going to talk with Sahadev Sharma. There's some stuff that Jed Hoyer had to say about the Cubs that I want to talk about a little bit as well in this hour. But Friday night, I was at Cubs convention, and our program director, Mitch Rosen, said, hey, I know you've been trying to get Pat Hughes on House of L. And we had had this set up that Pat was going to be on House of L. He was going to be one of the first people on House of L. And I was going to go and talk with him after a game. But it ended up being, remember that crazy game the Cubs had where it rained and rained and rained and it stopped raining and it kept raining and the start time was supposed to be like 10 o'clock, but then the lights went out? So when that happened, I had to stay here like throughout all of it. And Les was expecting to go on the air that night at like 2 in the morning. So I had to stick around here and wait until Les got here. So I couldn't go and interview Pat, which, and then, you know, then it becomes a scheduling issue and all this stuff. I was so happy when Mitch was like, hey, Pat's available at 8 o'clock. Do you want him? Yes. Yes. I very much would like to talk with Pat Hughes about a whole bunch of stuff. For those of you who have listened to my podcast, I do a podcast that's independent of the radio show called House of L. I talk with journalists, media people about how they do their job. So what I was hoping to do while we were at Cubs convention, have some Cubs conversation with Pat, but also talk to him about the process of being a play-by-play guy, because I think that he's really good at doing it. So we sat down and chatted. I was very thankful that he was so gracious with his time. This is the incomparable award-winning Pat Hughes and I talking about how things are going as the Cubs head into Cubs convention.
This is a very exciting time in the offseason. The Cubs convention, all of these amazing fans here. I got to host the opening ceremonies earlier this afternoon. Thousands of people were there. All the favorite Cubs of today and yesteryear attended, and the audience was enthusiastic to a tremendous degree. It's always a thrill. It's on that list of things in life that never get old.
It's interesting to me because having the opportunity throughout the season, I think I filled in on 7 games this past season for Zach Zaidman. And what I noticed about you having the chance to work with you, and I was very honored by the opportunity to do so, is that your level of enthusiasm, it doesn't matter if it's game 1 or game 163 or a playoff game or whatever, or a World Series game 7. Your level of enthusiasm stays the same. How did you develop that? Why is that still something that you're able to do at this point in your career?
I would say a simple answer to that good question would be that I absolutely love baseball. I love the game. And when you think about my world, Lawrence, in these last 4 or 5 years, it's about as good as it could possibly be for a broadcaster. I have this amazing partner, Ron Coomer. I absolutely love him. He's a talented guy. He's smart. He's insightful. He's a former player. He's a Chicago native, former Cub, and he has a great sense of humor. So we get along great, and that is paramount when you spend so much time with a partner over 6 months working every single day. So Coomer, Zach Zaidman has been an excellent addition. Mark Grody did a good job. But the team on the field, the Cubs have made the playoffs four consecutive years. And when you think back, if you're old enough to have been a veteran Cubs fan, they went from 1945 to 1984 without a single postseason appearance. That's a 39-year drought between postseason games. So I don't take this for granted, this last four-year run. Of course, the culmination was that World Series that was the thrill of a lifetime for me. So it's been a great team. We have the best audience in the world. Cub fans are, as a group, the sweetest, most kind, gracious audience on the planet. So that's another reason that I'm enthusiastic every single game. So I got Coomer, got a great team, I got great fans to work for, and then the management. That's always an important thing, too, for any performer, the people you work for. Well, we have Mitch Rosen, the executive producer. He is wonderful. He goes out of his way to make sure that we have everything we need. I can't say enough good things about Mitch. He's been a great guy to work for. And then you look at the management on the Cubs side. Tom Ricketts and his family, they want to win as badly as a ball player does. And they have spent a ton of money refurbishing and restoring the ballpark and also acquiring the talent necessary to win a World Series. Theo Epstein's about the best GM you would ever see. Crane Kenny, the president, is another guy that has been wonderful. So from everywhere that I look in my little orbit here in the last 4 or 5 years, it's nothing but good. Good team, good management, good partner, good fans. What more could a guy possibly want?
How did you develop your style as a play-by-play guy? Because it is so enjoyable. It feels like you're taking a long drive because baseball games are 3 hours long. But you're taking a long drive with a friend. That's a hard thing to master, and I think that you do it as well as anybody who's ever done it. So how did it develop?
I think just experience. Your basic personality, I guess, has to come out. Again, I love the game. I love to learn the language. The language fascinates me. I try to increase my vocabulary every single day if I can. I have that word of the day that Webster's puts out online. I'm always going to the dictionary looking up words. So I love the language. I love the fact that you can make a living covering baseball by speaking about it. I love the history of the game. So when I was a kid, I played every single day. I was not a great player, but I was good. I was a good amateur athlete. But I got to be about 18, and I realized I'm not going to be a big league ball player. I'm not going to be a point guard in the NBA. I'm not going to be a quarterback in the NFL. And I thought the next best thing would be to start studying the art and the craft of play-by-play. And that's what I did at the age of about 19. And you just have to get out and practice, Lawrence. It's one of those things where you can learn only so much reading about broadcasting sports in a book. You can only learn from a classroom or a professor telling you about it. If you want to do play-by-play, you got to get out to the field, out to the gymnasium, and start practicing play-by-play. It'll feel very awkward the first time you do it because you don't know what to say. And you have no clue as to how to get from point A to B to C. But then the second time you do it, it feels a little less awkward, and so on and so on. So I was lucky that I started with great passion to try to learn how to do play-by-play when I was about 19.
I feel like I don't have to introduce or reset this segment because people know who that voice is, but that voice is the voice of Pat Hughes. And I know that the people that are standing here at the Sheraton, if you hadn't already heard, Pat has signed a multi-year extension to stay the Cubs broadcaster for a long time, which is great. And I was reading your quote about how lucky you are. You've talked a little bit about that in the time that we've had together. I'm happy that you're back. I feel like we're in the golden age of Cubs baseball. And that's a weird thing to say with a team whose history goes back to the beginning of the league. But things have been so great over the last 4 years that it's hard to argue with the results that this team has had and how wonderful this is for Cubs fans.
Lawrence, it is. Winning so many ball games. The Cubs have won more games, I believe, than any team in the National League overall in the last 4 years. I know last season ended on a very disappointing and unceremonious note by losing the first game right out of the playoff chute against Colorado, the wild card tiebreaker, after the day before the Cubs also suffered a disappointing home loss for the division championship in the single game against Milwaukee. That's not the way anybody wanted the season to end. But if there's one thing that you learn about baseball and sports in general as you go through this journey of sportscasting, it's a very unpredictable business. And in baseball, one little bad bounce, one little bloop single that falls in, or one ground ball single that they hit that does not go to a fielder, but it goes right between the shortstop and the third baseman, that can make the difference in winning or losing. And in every sport, in fact, I thought about the Cubs' season end when the Bears lost their game against the Eagles. Very similar. It gave me that same sick feeling because all year the Bears were one of the best teams in the National Football League. And then in the first game of the playoffs, a heartbreaking loss. Very similar to what the Cubs experienced about 3 or 4 months ago. But you know what? In sports, you get to a certain point. Everybody who's in the game understands this. You get to a point in the playoffs, you have to win that game. If you win, you advance. If you don't, your season's over, and that's just the way it is.
How do you handle the highs and lows of a 162-game season?
I try to be ready every single day. I have a routine. I try to read as much as I can. I read online. I read newspapers on the road or at home. And sometimes I will read about baseball notes. And sometimes I'll read about something that I think might be fun to discuss with Ron Coomer. There might have been a weird double play in a game in Seattle last night. Or the Yankees might have had a triple play turned in a game against whomever. And that might be something. Like, we get to the second inning of a ball game. Hey, Ron, how about that triple play last night at Yankee Stadium? Were you involved in any triple plays? You know, that kind of thing. So I love to do the homework. It's not work when you love to do something. I simply wake up, try to get some information for that broadcast. I don't want to kill a broadcast with too many stats. You have to give some statistical data because baseball is very numerically oriented, right? Batting average, earned run average, home runs, RBIs. You have to give some stats. But there's that real fine line between giving enough and giving too many. Because if you give too many, the audience will not be able to absorb them. And therefore, it won't mean anything to them. So that's the thing you learn with experience.
How are you able to incorporate Ron Coomer? I mean, obviously, you and Ron Santo had such a great relationship. And bringing in a new partner that's got different experience, who is different in the way that you interact with each other, how long before you felt like you guys were connecting in a way that the audience could share in?
It takes a little time, but Coomer has such a good personality. He's so friendly. He's the kind of a guy, and there's a lot of people in Chicago like this, you spend 5 minutes with them, and you feel like you've known them your whole life, right? And that's Coomer. He's always smiling. He's always joking around. He listens to you when you talk. He's a total team player. And I knew just from when he was a Cub, Lawrence, that he was a worker. This is a guy that did not have tremendous, unbelievable natural ability. He had a lot of talent, but Ron Coomer worked to get to the big leagues, and he worked to stay in the big leagues for about a decade. So I knew right then that he had a work ethic, which is fine with me. That's the kind of a guy I want to be working with. I knew he liked to laugh. He liked to have fun. And the thing I didn't realize until I started working with him was how smart he was and how insightful he was about the game and telling me and the listeners what a ball player is thinking, why a play didn't work, what a player could have done so that it might have worked. He's extremely bright. And the thing I love about him, he doesn't get too technical the way that a lot of ex-players do. Ron speaks in a language that everyone can understand.
Right now, the Cubs are in a spot where for years, the people that are in front of us, the person in the car that's a Cubs fan, has always been the hunter. The Cubs have been the hunter. They've been trying to get where the Cardinals are as an organization. now, over the last couple of years, we've seen them become the hunted, whether it's by the Cardinals or more recently by the Brewers. What's that like when you see the franchise kind of flip its outward personality to being the team that everyone hates because they're in front instead of the lovable team that everyone was rooting for?
I like it. I like it a lot. I like to be in that spot where you are leading and everyone else is chasing you. As you were saying that, Lawrence, I covered a lot of basketball in my life, and I worked with the late, great Al McGuire. He was the coach at Marquette, led them to an NCAA championship in 1977, I believe. But he had many teams at Marquette that were ranked number one in the country. And I said, I would say to him, you know, off the air or on the air, I'd say, Al, what was it like when you were 20-0 and you took Marquette to a place like Kentucky or Indiana? I said, did that bother you? He said, no, it didn't bother me a bit. The guys on the other side, they're looking at us. We're 20-0. They're the ones that should be worried, not us. So I like that attitude.
If people want to hear your calls and the call of Game 7, baseballvoices.com, I love it. I love that you're one of the best things that Mitch Rosen has done at the Score, along with sharing your calls, is sharing your scorecard. So I'm just going to tell you, in the times that I was there, I am obsessed with your scorecard. I'm obsessed with it. Like, I walk in there and I'm like, okay, how does Pat do his scorecard so he keeps everything straight? I gotta know. Like, how did you come up with your style and the way that you share the information so that it's easy for you to get to in a broadcast?
Well, I do the lineups. And again, I try to keep it simple but accurate. Make sure you get the right name. And I write them down phonetically. I don't spell names the right way. I spell them the way I say them. So, for example, Jason Hayward is H-A-Y. I knew it's spelled H-E-Y. But for me, when I'm broadcasting and I see a play and I look down at the card, I want to be able to see exactly what I have to say at that moment. It's a split-second thing. You can't be thinking, now, let's see, is that an E or an A? You know what I mean? So phonetics are important. I put down batting average, home runs, and RBIs for each guy. I do what the guy has been in the series. You know, Chris Bryant steps in against this Brewer pitcher, and he's 4-for-6 in the series so far with a home run and 3 runs batted in. So, you know, just a little bit about what he's done lately. If a guy's in a hitting streak, he's hit safely in 11 consecutive games, during which time he's hitting .392. And then over on the right side, I put what are called topicals. And those are the things I mentioned earlier that I can discuss with Ron Coomer. Maybe baseball history, maybe a funny play, maybe a funny story that I heard on the bus, something that we can joke about. And that's also something, Lawrence, that over time you learn to do. You try to use those things early in the game, the fun stuff. You don't want to wait until the eighth inning when the game is on the line, it's a tie ball game, and the Cubs have the bases loaded. Hey, Ron, let's talk about this funny story. No, that's not the time. That's the time you're bearing down, and you're describing in detail exactly what's going on in the drama of the ball game. So, you know, you set the stage early, then you do the storytelling and the fun stuff in the middle innings, and then you really bear down and try to cover all the drama that you can in the last 3 innings.
We're getting a master's class on how to do this job the right way from Pat Hughes right now. Convention coverage here is being sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. While you're here at Cubs Convention, stop by Lizzie McNeil's Irish Pub next door. They've got the Tito's special all weekend long. So at this point of the season where you've got a couple weeks before the guys get down to Arizona, what things for the 2019 Cubs are you most looking forward to?
I would say just the season getting underway. Whenever you have a season that leaves a bad taste in your mouth, not that the Cubs had a bad year. They had a good year, but it was a disappointing finish. And I'm just kind of ready for a new season to get underway. There's a lot of great talent. We saw them at the opening ceremonies about 2 or 3 hours ago. You think about Anthony Rizzo, a healthy Chris Bryant, Javier Baez. I want to see all 3 of those guys healthy, batting in the order, in some order. Then you throw in Ben Zobrist and Jason Hayward and Kyle Schwarber and Ian Happ and Wilson Contreras. You know, you got a lot of guys who can really hit that ball. So we also have Cole Hamels for a full season. It's going to be a good starting staff. I do think that Theo Epstein and his staff are working diligently every single day to try to strengthen the team, and it would not surprise me at all to see them sign another bullpen guy or two. And here's another thing, Lawrence, that experience has taught me. The things that are discussed, like you and I are discussing right now in mid-January, they may, but they quite possibly may not have anything to do with the Cubs in August or September. There will be young guys that will come along and make an impact. There will be trades. There will be injuries. You hate to say it, but they always happen to teams at various times, and it has a huge impact on your success or failure. There will be older players that you think will still be a star, but he's not going to be a star anymore. He's going to start going downhill. And not to put any kind of a jinx on a guy like Yadier Molina, but there would be a candidate right there. He's been one of the best catchers in all of baseball for over a decade. Excellent hitter, tremendous defensive player, great thrower. But at some point, Yadier Molina, as a catcher, is going to start wearing down and his skills will decline. So that's something just to maybe that I'll maybe keep in mind. But so many things happen that are unpredictable. The game almost has a life of its own each and every season. You never know what to expect. You have an idea of what kind of a team you have, but you're never really sure.
How hard do you have to work to describe all of the interesting and fun things that Javier Baez does on a baseball diamond?
He is so much fun because he supplies so much dialogue for us, Lawrence. I love watching him play. He's one of the most gifted ball players that I've ever seen. When you think about hitting with power, driving in runs, clutch hitting, but it's the defense, the wizardry at multiple positions. It's the tags that he makes. He might be the best tagger of a guy sliding into a base that I've ever seen. The base running, the daredevil base running. He has great instincts. He almost never makes a mistake. And his mind works so quickly on the diamond that he'll throw to a base that very few guys would have thrown to. But he just, it's like he sees the play almost before it happens. And he's got that skill that you cannot teach. But I love watching him play. And I mentioned tonight during the opening ceremonies, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a candidate for the most valuable player in the National League for the next several years.
When you see all these people that come to the convention, and now you've seen it for, you know, a quarter of a century with the Cubs, what's this like for you to still be a part of this and be such an important part of it?
Well, it's a thrill, and it never gets old, and I am blessed to have a position of such prominence and privilege. And, you know, you mentioned I was able to sign a new contract. I was thrilled with that. I have no intention, after I leave the Cubs, I have no intention of ever broadcasting another game for another big league team. I just couldn't. I don't think I could possibly do that. And I definitely want to finish my career here. I don't know when that's going to be. That may be up to forces that I can't even foresee right now. But I love being the voice of the Cubs. Again, I have so many great things working with Coomer and Zach and working for Mitch and working for Crane and Tom with the Cubs and the audience. The audience is amazing. You know what's funny? At the end of every year, Lawrence, I get emails and texts and faxes and not so many faxes anymore, but you get correspondence. You get old-fashioned letters from fans. They say, thank you, Pat. And I'm getting more of Mr. Hughes, by the way, lately. So thank you, Pat, or Mr. Hughes, sir, for staying here. Thank you for the job you do. And I feel like saying to everyone, you're welcome, but I think you've got it all wrong. I'm the one thanking you. And that's the way I feel.
I've been holding on to this brain teaser that I've wanted to ask you for 2 years, okay? Through the 2016 season, these two men whose careers intersected covers the length of baseball's history. Who are these two men?
Now, when you say the length of baseball history, going back to 1876?
Correct. Through 2016.
Two players? I'm not sure I understand.
Not two players. these two men, which might give it away.
Two men. So a guy that was there in 1876 spent a long time in the game up to...
He intersects with another man, and then those two men encompass the history of the game from the beginning until 2016.
So we're talking four total men overall?
Two men.
Just two men. The first name that comes to mind would be Cubs pitcher Albert Spaulding.
Well, that's a good guess, but it's not Albert Spaulding. I'll give you a hint. One of them is a broadcaster.
Well, let's say Vin Scully.
Correct.
Vin Scully, 67 years with the Dodgers. And I miss him every time we go to Dodger Stadium. That was one of the coolest things about doing a Cubs-Dodgers game in L.A., knowing that the next booth over, Vin Scully is broadcasting, and you're also broadcasting at the same time. Something very, very cool about that.
The other man is Connie Mack.
Connie Mack. Connie a player?
Vin Scully called Connie Mack's managerial 1950 World Series. And then if you connect those all the way back through Connie Mack's playing career, it is the entire history of the game up through 2016.
Wow, that's a great one, Lawrence.
I've been dying to ask you, but games would get too exciting, and I couldn't ask you the brain teaser question, so I was glad I was able to ask it to you now.
That's good. That's good.
I really appreciate
you. You're welcome.
You. I think that you are a treasure. I think you are an incredible broadcaster, and we are all very lucky to have you in Chicago, and thank you for being on my show.
Thanks, Lawrence. Thank you. You put a lot of time into the questions. I know you did a lot of research, so I appreciate that. And you're certainly welcome, and we'll do it again.
That was Pat Hughes at Cubs Convention. We had a great time. It was awesome to talk all things baseball with him and talk about his broadcasting career. And I hope that you got as much out of that as I did. Maybe you didn't, because I'm a broadcasting geek. I'm a radio geek and a play-by-play guy. I wasn't kidding about me stalking his scorebook. I love to see the boards that people use when they do play-by-play. Zach's board, when he does basketball, is immaculate. Jordan Bernfield, when he does basketball, I love to kind of peek in. I haven't seen what Jeff Joniak does yet. I'll put that on the list of things I want to find out. Jeff would be a good guest on House of L. Let me see if I can get Jeff at some point. Bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and Big Ten West Division Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. I'll go back over some of the awesome names you threw at me via text about the Bulls. And there's a portion of the Jed Hoyer interview that I wanted to share with you and talk about a little bit, because it's something that I really admire about the Cubs front office. I'll share that with you next here on The Score. Right now, if you are caller 6 to The Score's contest line, which is 312-591-6700, we will give you a pair of tickets to see Impractical Jokers on August 10th at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. Yeah, yeah. So caller 6 of The Score's contest line, you can go see Impractical Jokers right now. Here, Herbie. Herbie has to then come in and get the sheet for it. So Cubs Convention was fun. I was there Friday night for a little bit. I actually do like, I have a thing against crowds and stuff, but I do like going to Cubs Convention because I get to see a lot of the Cubs beat writers that I don't ordinarily get to see, and you'll hear an interview with Barry Rosner, who was just kind of wandering around with a beer in his hand, and I thought it made for good radio, so we'll do that at 9 o'clock, and you can hear it. But I also just kind of like the vibe of it. Like, people are crazy about, and I'm not really sure why. Like, I'm not, and I'll be at Sox Fest this weekend. I know that there are things that I like, but it's a different feel for me. Like, last year, the thing that I took away from my Sox Fest experience was the Lego ballparks. They had brought in all these different Lego ballparks, and it was cool to see how they were laid out. when I was a kid, I used to play with Legos all the time. So seeing that level of construction with Legos and that level of detail with it was super cool. But when it comes to those fan conventions, like the standing in line for like Lee Smith's autograph or whatever, like that, I'm like, is that fun? Because it didn't seem like the people that were standing in front of me were having, and that's where the line was so long that it ended up back around our broadcast situation. And I just sat there like, wow, that is dedication. But, you know, those things are kind of like a big family reunion. And folks like family reunions sometimes. Sometimes they're terrible. You been in some bad family reunions, Tony?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's a lot of cousins to remember, like second cousins that you remember.
I only do it just to make sure I don't marry a cousin. That's probably the primary reason I like going to family reunions.
It's not a bad idea. It's not a bad idea. It's weird. Like, I met a dude earlier this year that was like, hey, like, saw me on TV. He's like, I'm your cousin. I'm like, okay. Everyone's my cousin. And it turns out he wasn't lying. We actually are cousins. But then what type of relationship do you then end up forming with that person? Like, I have a good relationship with a couple of, like, my second cousins. But it's hard enough to keep up with my first cousins.
Yeah, I've just come to accept the fact my kids are probably not going to know their extended family. Just know you can't marry that one, can't marry that one, can't marry that one.
That's the only reason that you want them to know the family?
Yes.
Is because of that?
Yes.
Herbie, you ever go to a good family reunion or you ever hit up a bad one?
I haven't been to a real family reunion in probably since I was 12. I'm trying to think of one recently. No, I haven't. I don't remember any. I'm usually the guy in the background, just saying hello initially, and then finding a quiet room where I can watch a game or something like that and chill out. That's what I do on holidays, anyways. Like, just say what's up to people, and then go and watch a game or something like that. I'm not big into the extended family. I'm big into the immediate family. I barely see them as it is, like 5 times a year.
Yeah, I. Like, we all got the cousins, the first cousins got together. My Uncle George always has a nice little get-together for the family, and I think it's great. And then the first cousins got together, and I had a great time. Now, granted, you know, my older cousin, Michael, and my brother weren't there, so then I'm the oldest. I'm the next oldest. So it was weird, like, to be, like, the old guy in the room. But it was so fun. Like hanging out and like hanging around like their babies. Like, that's hysterical to me because then you see like, oh, I remember when your dad was, and then you sound like an old dude because that's how old people used to talk to me when I was little. You look just like your daddy. I sure do. And my mother always jokes, I made it happen that way on purpose so there would be no problems. But we do. My brother said something the other day that reminded me of my father so much, I started laughing. He was there at the house before you guys got there.
Oh, I was looking for him. He was there last year.
Yeah,
I saw him right when he was leaving.
He had to go to work. But it's funny because, you know, you have people over to watch the game, and then my brother doesn't really like sports. So, but he likes to be there. He likes to come hang out with all the sports people, which I also think is strange, but I love that he does it. But it's kind of like when I used to hang around all his music people. I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. But it was a good energy. But, you know, family reunions are weird because sometimes people know you and you don't really know them. And, I mean, it's weird. Like, you're not supposed to have to ask your cousin, like, what their name is, right? You're supposed to know. Is it? All right, look, the perspective that we're talking about is fairly limited. Like, we're talking about black families. Can we do, like, a little cultural exchange right now? If you're not black, because I think we got the black experience covered. Is it like that with white families, Latino families, Asian families, where you end up at these family reunion-type deals, and you're like, who are you? How are you related? It's like the scene from Wedding Crashers. How are you related to the family?
That just struck a nerve with me, actually. I went to one like 5 years ago in LaGrange, and everybody who's older than me knows me, and I know none of them. That's kind of a thing with me anyways. Like, I don't remember any names to faces and such. I'm like, oh, yeah, you. How you doing, guy? And but they're like, hey, Herbert, how you feeling? How's the score? How's this? They know my life. I'm like, how do you know all this?
Well, that's – I mean, it is a little bit different because there is an issue of notoriety.
But they don't know – they don't listen. They just – my mom told them.
Right. My mom is like the champion at this. She knows everything. So I can just – I can kind of give her a look and be like, I don't know who that is. And she'd be like, oh, that's your cousin, blah, blah, blah. Remember when you were little? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, oh. And she's got, like, the family trees on both sides. Like, her side and my father's side. Like, she can recite his family tree better than he can. But that's, you need that person. Like, that person is critical.
It is. They can tell you who not to marry.
Well, more than that, they can just tell you who to say hello to and why that person is looking at you, saying, you look just like your daddy.
I just don't like being around the bush, you know. With this, it's like, look, I know we can exchange numbers or social media. I'm not going to talk to you. You're not going to talk to me. Let's just know that we're related and then just keep it moving.
Well, I mean, I have, like, my cousin Tyra. Like, we don't talk all the time, but every time I talk to her, I'm happy to talk with her. But, you know.
I got to be honest with myself. I'm not going to give that extra effort. I'm just not.
I think we're finding out that you're kind of a bad guy, Tony.
Probably, maybe. I don't know. Like, that's extra work. Like, I have things to do. And my relative has things to do other than think about who am I related to and I need to have conversations with them. That takes a lot of effort, a lot. If you're not a part of my life growing up, that you probably weren't meant to be there.
But maybe they might be able to add something to your life right now.
Why is Tony just thinking about who he can't have sex with?
It's really weird that that's the lens with which he is having this conversation with us. Really weird.
Because also, you know what? I'm glad you brought this up.
Oh, here we go.
Because I've been thinking about this lately. It's like, all right, it's cool.
Hold on. Are you getting ready to give us a take on how you should be able to marry your cousin?
No, not at all.
Because I feel like that's where we're going right now.
I am not going there, no.
And truth be told, in a lot of black families in the South, stuff like that did happen. You were saying?
So, I've been thinking
about... Wait, hold on. Didn't one of the presidents marry their cousins?
Rudy Giuliani married his cousin.
He's not president. He married his third cousin. Like, did Woodrow Wilson... There was some president who married his cousin. It may have been Theodore Roosevelt. All right. Anyway, if Cardi B were here, we could ask her because she knows all that stuff. All right, Tony, I want you to hold your thought because we need to take a break.
Okay, got it.
The whole reason that we're talking about this is because I was talking about Cub Convention being like a big family reunion. That's how we ended down this wormhole. And now we have to take a break because Tony has something weird that he wants to say. So we're going to allow him to do that next here on The Score. I mean, pretty much played at every black family reunion. Oh, man. So, texters. Oh, I'm Lawrence Holmes, by the way, here with you until 10. Texters, thank you. It was FDR who married Eleanor Roosevelt, who was his fifth cousin, which at that point, I mean, you're related, but. Did you know, Herbie and Tony, that Eleanor Roosevelt is an honorary AKA?
I did not.
Yep.
Only one?
No, there's more honoraries, but I don't know if there are any more white ones. Probably.
I can't see her saying skiwee.
How about that last week?
Mm.
Oh, that was rough. But I give that reporter credit. She was like, this is what I thought it was, and it wasn't that.
I mean.
She didn't know. How was she supposed to know?
It freaked me out when the first time I heard it.
I mean, a little research.
I would say that you would probably ask somebody before tweeting and going, what was that? And then someone would have told you it's the ski-wee thing that they do. They were showing their approval and acknowledgement of their sorrow. And then one day I'll talk about my pledging experience with KASI. I did the Greek alphabet for Mel, and she was like, are you still supposed to know that? I'm like, yeah, when you're online, stuff gets drilled into your head because they'll do stuff to you if you don't get it right. So, yeah, I can sing the entire Greek alphabet, starting with Kappa, because you put Kappa first, even though it's not, because they don't want alpha. You understand. Well, some of you understand. I didn't cross, by the way. It's still fun, though. I haven't been to a good step show in a minute, maybe because, you know, I'm 43. But I remember we used to go to the Chaos at DePaul. Like, we would go up to Northwestern, and they'd have Chaos. Man, those parties back in the day were, have yourself a lot of fun there. All right, so Tony, before break, you were about to give us an awful take.
Not awful.
Okay.
But, but yeah, in terms of extended family, I am 26 years old.
Okay.
I am a formed adult.
Well, being. That's questionable.
You didn't
have pita chips until last year, Tony.
And they're excellent. I'm eating them now.
See?
I've gotten along this far in my life, which is, I think, relatively successful.
I would agree with that. You've done very well.
And at this point in time, there's no use of adding more people in my life.
So no new friends,
except they're coming
Drake.
from my loins.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I have no use of adding more people.
Did you just say loins?
Yeah, coming from my loins.
You don't need any new friends is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, I can add acquaintances, but people that I, like, just generally want to talk to all the time, I don't think you're going to add that outside of, like, a spouse or something like that. So, my whole point is, like, does it matter, really, like, that much that we get to know these people?
I mean, it depends on what your definition of family is. I think that Herbie is probably representative of a lot of people where it's the immediate family and then like the satellite of the immediate family. So for me, it's the Holmeses and then my cousins. And my Uncle George is pretty damn dope. So and he used to take us, like, my family is a big reason why I do this for a living. As weird as it sounds. When I was a really little kid and I go over to my grandmother's house, that was when DePaul was really good and their games were on Channel 9. And so she would sit me in front of the TV. I'd be watching great DePaul basketball. That was the first team that I fell in love with. And my uncle used to take us every year. We'd go to the Bulls-Knicks game on Christmas. Every year. He bring us. So last year, I took him to a game, and we had a great time. So, I mean, I think that you're probably, like, you're a little extreme with it.
I'm just more honest with it. Like at family reunions, like, I'm not, what are we doing here? Like, I'm not here to talk about the weather and politics. Like, I'm what are we doing here?
You're honestly here to make sure that you
I'm
can't
here to make
date
sure
someone.
That I don't come across a cousin that I might want to date. Like, I can't have that happen.
Herbie, why are you not talking?
Because he started off the air talking about, why do I need to know my great-great-grandparents?
It doesn't matter.
That actually does matter.
It doesn't matter.
I literally told him, like, that's history. Those people, especially for people who are great-grandparents, they fought in wars.
Everybody fought in wars, Herbie.
For the most part, your great-grandfather or your great-great-uncle, they fought in a war, probably. It's good to go and talk to a person that had a different life experience than yourself to learn how they had to go through life, especially as an African-American man or woman in that era. You need to learn from these people so you can say, man, I'm privileged to have been born the time I was and to the family I was. So,
yeah.
And I appreciate what they have done to struggle so I can have the life that I live.
I mean, that takes it to a whole, like, different way of going about this.
Really?
Yeah, because, like, my cousin's back here.
He's looking at you sideways now.
No,
who is this dude?
We have extended cousins. I mean, they're cool, but we've all grown up separately. There's no point in trying to force a relationship now when we weren't around
each other. I don't think you have to force it, but I also think that it's okay to explore the things that make you similar, the things that make you different.
That's a lot of time.
And like how you were raised. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, my parents' best friends, I'm probably closer with their daughter than I am with some of my cousins. And I mean, like that woman is basically like, we're like brother and sister. And if you saw us, you'd be like, are y'all two related? And we're like, not at all. So I understand what you're talking about, that you can build a family of friends if you want it. And sometimes those are better. But you should have a sense of history, Tony. And your own family history is an easy place to start.
And to answer Tony's question earlier about if Eleanor Roosevelt's the only honorary white person in Alpha Kappa Alpha, that's not true. Jane Addams.
Okay, that makes sense.
Eleanor Guggenheimer also.
Guggenheimer or Guggenheim?
Guggenheimer.
Okay, who's she?
American civil leader, author, philanthropist in New York City.
Okay. We'll table this discussion for later because we need to talk baseball with Sahadev. But I appreciate the white folks who were like, yeah, man, my family reunions are about the same. One dude was like, we do name tags. That's the way to go. Name tags. And not no nickname. I need to know your birth with an F. Your birth name. I need to know. What are the Cubs doing differently this offseason than they've done before? Guess what? Sahadev is going to talk to us about it next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.